Greetings again in Jesus' name as we come together for this session. Today we're going to pick up where we left off yesterday, and then, like I said, we'll be moving into some areas that will be a little more teacher-generated problems, maybe some ways that we operate in our classrooms and in our schools. Yesterday we saw the effects. Put that back up there just for the effect of that bleeding away. That the small things, the little bites, the scratches, the tears that cause the nutrients and the breakdown in that vine of relationships. And I just can't stress hard enough what that is like to lose those relationships. It stops me from being able to reach them. It stops them from wanting to reach me. And it hinders every aspect of the teaching experience and the working together. It's a breakdown. Drawing has changed a little bit. As we covered some things yesterday, we talked about the isolation of those little grapes. Things that will isolate them and make it hard for us to reach them and keeps our relationship away from them. Notice the circles there. Yesterday I talked somewhat about the space between the circles or the grapes. The larger circles represent the protection or the wall that they're trying to put around themselves because they don't want a relationship with their leader anymore. Notice how it's gotten tighter to move around among those grapes. Almost impossible to move among some of them. Notice how the teacher's becoming hemmed in to their own place of authority. Matter of fact, he's only got one slot to get out of. And there's still a few out there that want to be what you want them to be. You can still reach those, but now they're becoming isolated somewhat away from the rest of the class. I hope you've never experienced a class like this. I have. And it's rough. What made me look at a lot of things, but after it's like that, like I said, it's rough. What made me look at a lot of different things was, what got me here? How did I get here? Could I prevent this? Yes, I could. A lot of it. But like I said yesterday, the powers of darkness want to, by any means possible, to turn our classroom into something just like that. That is a classroom that cannot function very well. Yesterday, we looked at a list of things. We had just gotten onto disrespect. And I want to pick up right there for a few minutes. I talked about this big fella here as disrespect. This thing represents things that we don't want to see in our classroom at all expense. Immorality, rebellion, defiance. He's hard to deal with. It's a weighty thing to carry around in a classroom. These things in here were smaller, but they build towards this. If we don't handle these properly, they can be worse than this. You'll see before it's over. Okay, disrespect. No longer respecting me. They've got a problem with me. I can't reach them. We have broken down. There's several ways that disrespect shows itself. It can show itself openly. It can be something locked in that you only see through the look in their eye, but you know you're losing it with them. It spreads. Disrespect cannot be tolerated. Don't let it be one of those things that, oh, he's just having a bad day, or she just got out of the wrong side of the bed, or he just jumped out of bed and landed on his head. I don't know what the problem is, but something's not right here. Watch that thing. Give it a little time, but if that disrespect shows itself again, get to work. Watch for the evidence of it. Like I said, it will spread, and it will spread to others, because your authority represents a stabilizing factor. And if a classroom has started to experience something like this, they don't want anything stabilizing to them. And it will transfer into something further that we'll talk about in just a few minutes. If it's displayed openly, then to some degree it's going to have to be addressed openly, so that those that are starting to sense this breakdown, that they can regain some confidence in us as teachers and the stability of our classroom. It needs to be handled in a way that can be shown to them that I am going to be in control and I am here for you. We aren't going to have disrespect. If disrespect is not handled that way, then it can just feed itself, and I can be the source of that feeding. I have experienced that. My name is Peter Witt. Peter went to the classroom wearing his sword and learned the hard way to leave it in the sheath. I was quick to draw it and looking for ears to lay on my desk. But that does not work. Love and patience. As we work through working with children, we have to give them time to, in this relationship we're trying to develop, we have to give them time to accept us and work with them and trust us, and not do things that's going to steal that confidence away from us. Where do we find that love and that compassion? Correction with compassion is a valuable asset in a teacher. Through our prayer life, it's not within me. If you have a dose of it, praise the Lord, but I didn't. I found mine in a little closet down the hall called a storeroom, where there was a bunch of brooms and mops. If they could talk, they could tell you some things. But losing control and reacting will only make the problem worse. I remember one year I got a group of boys, came to my classroom, and I was a new teacher. They were seventh grade boys. And that group of boys, disrespect and respect was kind of there, but it was weak. I was trying to build it. I wanted to command it and demand it. I was inexperienced. But I was teaching social studies class. And they just, have you ever taught a class when they're only half paying attention? It's kind of discouraging, you know, you've prepared your lesson. Well, that was going on, half their attention. I finally just stopped the class, and I'm a little bit abrupt like that. And I said, look, y'all, I have other things I could be doing. I've got work at my desk. I'm in here for y'all. And I want us to enjoy this class and get the most out of this lesson. It's an interesting lesson. And I was just kind of into talking about why they need to listen to me and pay attention. And in a little gap of my talk there, you know, just a little space, a voice said, when I mentioned about going back to my desk and doing things that are waiting on me, a little voice said, why did you do it? It came from back near the back of the class. Well, this is something I had not wanted to meet. And I grabbed for my sword so fast. But something stopped me. And I just simply said, at first I let it, you know, get real quiet in there. you could have heard a gnat hiccup almost. I don't know if y'all know what gnats are, but anyway, they're small creatures. And then I said one phrase. I said, "That better never happen in my class again." And I just left it there. They were wanting to see if I was going to explode, if I was going to start gathering up scalps to put on my lodge pole, or what I was going to do. To tell the truth, I didn't know what I was going to do. But something said, "Don't do what you want to do." Well, later I doled out some real heavy punishment for some of those boys that were in kind of a ring, and I'll talk a little more about those boys and why they felt like that a little bit later. So, disrespect is something that we can expect. To a certain degree, we can almost demand it. But defiance and things that meet us openly, we cannot tolerate for the damage they will do to our relationship. But don't go at them through loss of control. Be sure that you have yourself totally under control. Because coming back to us, whenever we come to a student in a way that they realize we understand and that we're real, and I ask myself, have I done something to earn this disrespect? If I have, then I need to make it right and tell them, I made a mistake. I didn't handle that correctly. That's not going to diminish my authoritative figure in front of them. As a matter of fact, it's going to speak volumes to them about what real respect is about. I encourage you to talk frequently. I've talked about open communication this week. I encourage you to talk frequently with your students about the operation of your classroom, what is right, what is wrong. And I'm not talking about a bunch of individual things. I'm talking about the law of right and wrong. I'll explain a little bit later about how valuable just having simple rules are. But keep the communication open so that everyone understands where the lines are. Don't assume that they shouldn't have done that. They know better. Do they? Have we talked about it? Spend time talking, communicating those things. Because disrespect, if it would stay there, we could handle that. You know, dealing with it, disciplinary, we could get somewhere with that. But it doesn't stay there. It goes somewhere that's deeper and darker, and one of the most deepest and darkest places that you can find yourself operating like that. And that's when it turns into rebellion. The disrespect has moved into an area that now not only do they disrespect me, they're rebelling against me. And when rebellion sets in, you can't do anything right. You can't do anything to please them. Try hard as you may, they'll find fault with it because now they're rebelling. I've found rebellion very, very hard to deal with when it has really set in, and that's the reason I never wanted to see it again once I did, a time or so. It does its work in secret. We can't pin it up. Rebellion is the sin of witchcraft. Where does that take us? First of all, it's scriptural. But after I dealt with rebellion, I realized that is the truth. If I could go specifically to an area and say, this is where I blew it, or this is where they blew it, or this is what's breaking down, but it's like trying to catch a ghost. Everywhere, it's just slowly seeping through. Students are becoming involved in it that don't want to be. And some don't even know why they are. It's just because this feeling is, he's wrong, he's out to get us. Did you hear what he did today? Did you hear what he said we're going to have to do now? You know, you can't, if you want to pass out candy, Did you hear we're going to have to eat candy after lunch? When rebellion sets in, it starts eating away at everything. And the relationships go down the drain. They want to bunch up and whisper. Have you ever walked up to a group of students and the first thing they did is get quiet? What's wrong? Catch them in the hallway a little bit later and they get quiet and out the door they go when the teacher kind of comes by. Well, be cautious because they might be planning your birthday party. But that might be a good telltale sign that rebellion's setting in. They're discussing things and they don't need you there. And it might be about you. Girls like to gather in the restroom. That's a case in itself. Boys out back. It's another. But it has such a negative response to everything we try to do and undermines us. And like I said, there's a lot of innocent people that get involved in it. Disrespect is not properly named a fox. He's really a wolf. We're not going to put him in this category of these little things. We're just going to leave him there. He's dangerous. He bites big bites. Causes bad damage. Let's look at some things that can build that. Sometimes we cause the little foxes. What about the way you do the structure of your room and the way you want it to operate? Everybody likes rules, and some people like more of them than others do. I was one that liked a lot of them when I first started teaching. Inconsistent and undefined rules. If I want to confuse my children, something today that's wrong can be right or maybe accepted tomorrow. Or something that was wrong yesterday, nobody does anything about it if it comes around to us today. He drags us down if that one's left go, I'm telling you. Inconsistent and undefined rules. Children operate well if they know what's going on. But we can't expect them just to know it. We've got to be open and communicate what we desire for them to do and know and how to operate. And when I think of rules that aren't clear, I remember one time when I was a little boy, I was in only grammar school, and I experienced a rule that wasn't clear. And what it was we were in a setting like this, huge school, hundreds of students, and they told us some things that they want to change in the school. I was in the second grade. I was scared in there to start with and wasn't paying attention. One of the things is don't walk on the chains by the walkway out front. Or you'll be in to see the principal. And I didn't want to do anything that I wasn't supposed to. But the first thing I did after school was dismissed was go out there and jump up on those chains. And those chains ran up through a pipe. They were about knee high and down. And I was getting pretty good at it. I'd been practicing. And I was going along there, you know. I'd just gotten a little ways when somebody called me off that chain. What did I do, you know? You need to go see the principal. Well, I actually got a spanking. I was already so scared, all he would have needed to do is just say, don't do that anymore, and I wouldn't even gotten near those chains. But that was a consistent rule. It wasn't a well-defined rule. The students didn't all understand that. Do I have rules in my classroom that aren't well-defined? Do you like a lot of rules? I did. I was a very structured person. We used to build cattle equipment. gates and panels and things like that. And I just love having a place laid out where I can drive my cows up here and force them to go over there and open this gate, and they have to go that way. And I can effectively work them and cut them out, put them in different pastures. So I started out teaching like that. I made a set of rules that I could force them to do this and not allow them to do that. We'd end up over here where I wanted to be. That didn't work very well. Because fences have to be kept up. And with time, I had vines on my fences. You know, I have to keep them up. Every rule you make is going to have to be kept up. We have to have rules. But I learned to operate on as few as I could to get the job done. I had a relationship that did more than fences would do. Once we convince children that right is the right thing to do and wrong is wrong, we're halfway to getting there. Now let's help them understand what is right and what is wrong. If we're going to change policies or rules, we need to talk to the children about it. Make them aware of it. Sometimes I even like to bring them into it. I already know what we're going to do. But I like to let them feel like they're a part of this thing. It helps that develop that relationship. It gives them a responsibility in upholding it and helping keep the rules productive. Now, one that follows that, it does a lot of damage too. Inconsistent and unfair punishment. How do I punish children? What do I use to decide how I'm going to? By the grace of God, it needs to be done with love, and it needs to be done in a way that always produces redemption, that helps free them from whatever the offense is and restores them to a healthy, secure position with the leadership and in their class setting. But when we are inconsistent in that, they start to disrespect us and resent us. And if my punishment flies off the handle too quick, after a while, I just took my sword off and put it away, because as long as it was there, I wanted to draw it. But if we have to be stable in that thing, how do you punish? What are going to be your punishments? If you're going to make defined punishments for defined offenses, you're probably going to run into problems with that. Because each offense comes from a different setting, a different motivation. So we need to look at the circumstances. Is this the first time? Or is this the fifth time? One thing that's very important when we are punishing is to be sure that the student clearly understands what this is all about, and they're with you, that this was wrong. If they say, "Mr. Whit, I didn't know that that was wrong," you know where my mind goes? To those chains in front of that school. Okay, then let's talk about it. But next time that doesn't work. Punishment should match the offense. When I think of this inconsistent, unfair punishment, let's say that I have, this is a trap that teachers can fall into so unknowingly what it will do. But let's say I have some way here of, if you make a noise in the classroom, you're going to have to stay in and put your head on your desk. Okay. Does everyone understand that? Every one of you? No noise once we start class. Sally turns around, her elbow catches her broken, and kablam, hits the floor. You're staying in and putting your head on your desk. Was that an offense? What is an offense? What is worthy of punishment? Punishment comes when something is willfully done. Accidents are not offenses. When we punish for an accident, or we punish out of clear understanding, they class it quickly as unfair, and it turns into something that is going to lead towards deeper, darker, bigger, heavier things to deal with. Be careful. Be thoughtful. Proper punishment has a positive effect. Children that clearly know where the lines are and clearly understand the consequences really are secure children. If I would give you a job to do, and I wouldn't tell you everything about the job, I would just expect you to do it and that you kind of need to understand how to do it. And I'm going to give you a vague outline of what I want, and then you make some mistakes, and you don't receive a positive teaching in that. All of that heads into some area, and when we come up to unstable leadership, leadership that causes bad questions in children's minds about our leadership. We've talked about clearly defined expectations for these children. What are they doing? What am I going to do about it? When I'm laxed, the situation gets out of control, and then I come down hard on them, that's confusing. Very confusing. That builds resentment, and that boils down to something bigger than that. That spirit that starts moving around, that rebellion. Had a teacher one time that was a well-meaning teacher, but he didn't deal with things like he should have. He just didn't feel comfortable with taking a hold. And I wanted to help him understand the damage that's being done, but he saw it firsthand. He had a group of boys in there that were a pretty rowdy bunch, and they did not respect this man. And things were getting worse and worse. As the disrespect broke down, rebellion, they started working into this thing and pulling off little stunts here and little stunts there, supposedly behind his back, but I found out they weren't all behind his back as far as I thought they were. Because they even went so far, you know, a boy can stick his hand under his arm and make some obnoxious noises. That went on in the classroom. And he did not do anything about it. Well, it got to the point that he knew it was out of control. So he decided he's going to have to thrash them all soundly. And he chose a extension cord to do it with, which they classed as not punishment, but him taking out his anger on us. Then things were out of control. If they cannot understand clearly what's expected and trust us to reach them with those things and help them, and we break down the relationship. That group of boys was the same group of boys that I got the next year, that when I told them I have things at my desk to do, they said, "Why don't you go do them?" They wanted to see what my reaction would be. Well, they found it was completely different. I'd like to tell you that group of boys is one of the best boy groups I've ever had. I had a lot of good ones, but that was a real good one. And they went on to be some fine young men. We had a wonderful time together. But they had to clearly understand that I meant what I said and where the lines were and that I loved them. And we went forth. Pray for wisdom and stability, that we can be a teacher that reaches them firmly and rewarding them. Unaddressed discipline. Disobedience, sorry. We've talked about this some, letting things go, not wanting to see them. The fellow that I talked about was guilty of that. I've seen other situations where a teacher just doesn't feel like jumping in there and grabbing this one. Maybe I'm so bogged down. But what does it do? Again, it causes confusion if we don't address these things. I've had teachers to come to me and tell me in staff meetings, "Mr. Whit, I'm so bogged down in my classroom. The children just, they're not respecting me like they should. We're not getting our work done. The assignments are getting drug out." I just heard over and over here, breakdown, breakdown, breakdown. What are your problems in the classroom? "Well, I don't have any real big problems." That's the thing of it. I don't have any big problems. It just seems like it's just harder and harder. I said, "What are your little problems?" "Oh, that's the problem," she said. If they did something really bad, I'd get them for it. But they don't. It's just little things, just little naughty things, small things. And then I ask her, "Which would you rather carry around every day with you? A big rock that weights you down? Or would you rather carry around a big bucket full of little rocks?" She saw the point. She had allowed unaddressed disobedience in her classroom to get to the point that she had more weight that she was trying to drag around through her classroom in little small things that needed to be addressed and clearly cleaned up. And it was dragging her down seriously. Nothing in the world is the easiest thing to do. It's the easy, just nothing. I sat in a classroom one time and I was looking at the ceiling from my position. It was a drop ceiling. I got to noticing there's spots up there on that ceiling that looked like there are holes that pulled out pieces of the ceiling. And they were kind of scattered around. I looked at the students who were, some of them, in there the year before. I said, "Hey, y'all," this was when one of our free times of discussion, I said, "What's with the ceiling?" They kind of looked around. I said, "The spots." Oh, then they looked down. And some of them looked at each other. Kind of snickered, "We know what that's about." I said, "Come on. I'd like to really know. What went on? What's with the scene?" "Mr. Whit, we used to take our pencils. We'd sharpen them. And they were playing a game we called jackknife with a pocket knife in the ceiling. They'd flip them and see if they could time it to pop, stick in the ceiling." I was trying to imagine that. I said, "Well, you mean y'all actually stuck your pencils in the ceiling?" "Yes, we did." I said, "I see. How'd you get them out?" "We stood up and pulled them out." They knew what the next question was going to be. I looked over that group like I couldn't believe it. One of them kind of raised his hand. He said, "Mr. Whit, she was blind. She was blind." "Was she? Really?" "No, it was unaddressed. because she didn't know what to do with it. It was a pretty bad thing to do. So it got left unaddressed. And it was not the only issue. She went on to have quite a good year with her class, though, before it closed. So I know that for a fact, and I was really glad to see that things came together for her. But leaving them unaddressed does not make them go away. Partiality. How does that weigh us down? You know, all of us have children that are just easy to love. They want to please, do anything for you, and then we find ourselves feeling special towards them and being a little partial. That thing begins, and sometimes I don't even notice it. I've been guilty of this, not even noticing what I'm doing here. But the partiality, the special feeling I have here, is being noticed by the others. And that student, and soon I'm guilty of creating those circles among the students, because this student feels privileged. And the others start to sense that he's special towards him or her, you know, that's special. And as that breaks down, soon you'll notice an attitude in those students that aren't the pets of resentment, disrespect, and left go, it will turn into, again, a dark thing that we have to deal with. And really, when that situation comes about, the ones that aren't involved turn into real victims of that, because they get accused of things that they aren't even guilty of because they're partial or they're special. And it just works among the class to tear apart relationships with us and them. Let's guard ourselves carefully. Sometimes we say, I wouldn't be partial to a child at all, but it's easy to do and not realize. It really is. Well, we're just about out of time. It's lunchtime. We're going to pick up and continue with this. But there's one thing I'd like to challenge you with in leadership. The circle that represents our authority. How high are we elevated in that circle? Am I maybe on a throne in the center there? What do I think of myself? When we come, do we have to come down to be among our students? They feel that. That place needs to be level ground in there. Real level. And then we can easily move in and out of it. But it needs to be level ground, because if they think we are a ruler from on high and they're subjects to that ruler, that's a serious relationship hindrance right there. It really is. In establishing authority, we cannot establish ourselves that way, because there's a difference between a leader and a ruler. A leader leads from within. A ruler governs from above. And it just doesn't work for leadership to work that way. Sadly, I found it out.
For more free resources that support teaching and learning, visit thedocforlearning.org.